Jiffy real far. You were saying the leaves had been taken off the trees.
And so there wasn't anywhere to get out of the sun, apart from in the bunker. Well, that was like an oven. So you just got fitful sleeps as you could during the day, ready for the the following night. These attacks carried on virtually, I should say, nearly a month.
Was there just the smell of the rotting corpse?
Oh, yeah. As time went on, the amount of dead, it was just an absolute sickly stench. I am a butcher, and I've smelt rotten meat. But it's a completely different smell as rotting corpses. It's a terrible smell. And the evening time, when the sun went down, there was just one massive black cloud of flies coming off these bodies. And I mean, massive, of millions of blue bottles, I should imagine, coming up off these corpses. Just a black cloud just to leave them on an ear, you know, as a dust came and fly up. It really, the whole place really began to smell, and even the water began to have a faint, weird taste. Well, we got the water down in this little river that was going through the block. And then...
Did you have any truces with the Japanese to clear up? Did you have any truces with the Japanese to clear up?
No, the... You did occasionally see down in the... Because we was up on the hill and there was a valley. Odd times you did see the odd Jap around during the day. But they weren't bothering us, like, and we couldn't really reach them. And I think probably they were the ones that were going to come in. During the last attack, would probably try to take back some, you know, what could of the wounded, I don't know. Because we never heard of any wounded at all, you know, during the day. We never saw or heard of any of them that were left wounded. So I think probably during the last attack, they used that last attack to get the wounded out.
Did you have many casualties?
The first night, I think, we lost 3 men. We had men wounded. But at that time, when you went down to get washed, you bumped into your other lads, you know, your mates that had been with your platoon, or the only column that you knew. They'd say, well, so-and-so got it last night, so-and-so got it last night. And I think, well, I did, I know. I got so that I used to try and push it at the back of my mind. Because there were times when all this was happening that you suddenly think, I'm going to be here 1 minute, I'm not going to be here the next. You know, and you get a wave of panic. And then you say, pull yourself together, like, and things were going on, you know, you had to carry on doing what you were doing, so it was gone. But I think so you could handle it all, you got so that you thought, when they said they're gone, they hadn't gone, they'd been wounded probably and flown out, you know. You couldn't bring... You tried to shut out the fact that lads you knew, so many, were getting killed. Although, overall, I think, on our hill especially, the casualties were comparatively light. And I think they were within the block, because in this position we were the defender. They were the attacker. And they had to come to us. We were in position where... We had cover, and therefore, I think this was one of the reasons why, if you can say light casualties, they were comparatively light. Well, this went on for quite some time, and then Mike decided that enough's enough, and he would have a counter-attack from the block. Now, he took so many out of the block, so many from the block, his HQ company, I think, and some of the floater columns that were outside the block, We were spreadly very thinly on the ground to make up for those that weren't had gone out. And Mike counterattacked the Japs, and he inflicted heavy losses on them. And although we were attacked again, he began that he was pushing them up against us and the block, which really, as far as the Jap was concerned, there was the beginning of the end for him. After that that counterattack by Mike, it was never really attacked again. Things quietened down, and we went back to our, you know, waiting for it every night for someone that didn't come. And it was then, after that, shortly after that, that we moved out of the block, and we went up into the hills, which was supposedly like for a rest, and I assume to get further orders. And it was up in the hills when the first monsoon started. And from being hot and dry, it began to be wet and mucky, muddy. We were up in the hills, and you really had a ground sheet that you didn't know whether to put over you or under you. And at the end of the day, it didn't really matter because everything was soaking wet. It was in White City during these attacks that I'd had a fill-in in the army, in Inverness.
What exactly was White City?
Well, White City was a code name, or our code name, for this block. You see, Broadway was the code name for our... stronghold in Burma, and then they said, what shall we call a code name, the block? And it was decided on White City because of the number of parachutes that were hanging from the trees, because all the time we was in there, everything came in by parachute, and the parachutes landed in the trees, and they landed everywhere. So this is what it was, we all just know it's White City.
So the roadblock which was being attacked that you described was called White City?
White City, You're saying that this time I this filling came out, and I got a while, you know, I got a great toothache, terrible toothache. And I said, why did you go sick? I said, go sick? I said, what are they going to say to me if I go sick and say, please sir, I've got toothache? But I had that toothache for the rest of the time I was in Burma.
Were there people who were genuinely dodging the column in reality?
No. None of those that came with us, or none that I knew, you could ever call a column dodger. There were. This is what makes them unique. This is what makes, you know, that no matter how hard and how terrible it was, you really didn't hear complaints. Grumbled, yeah. But it was, you know, the whole thing was just, it was all just accepted, and that was it. It was pride in the brigade, and pride in the column. I think that's all everybody thought about. I say that, what makes Mike the man he is. I'm going to call it the man he is.
How did you cope with the monsoon?
Well, we started to move then. We'd got our orders that we were going on to Morgong, which was a Jap garrison town, or a town as towns are in Burma. And we started, after a spell of rest up in these hills, we started to march towards Morgong, and at this time we was climbing up 4,000 feet mountains, and over the other side, down the other side, this is a jungle and mountain, and of course it was monsoon, it was slippery, it was muddy. At times you had to offload the mules and manhandle the loads up a hill or down a hill. You was up to your knees in mud. The condition, you know, is really, really hard going. But finally we got well on our way to Morgong. And I woke up. I'd had malaria actually in White City. My first bout of malaria. And I had gone sick. And the MO says, well, you've got, I think it's malaria, you better bring your pack down here into the, away from, you know, and we'll treat you. So I said, no way am I coming down here. So I said, why not? Well, I said, it's too damn dangerous down here. She said, what are you talking about? Well, I said, I don't mind the Japs attacking, but I said, what I can't stand is, you know, the shelling and the artillery fire. I said, when they'd sort of got over us, they concentrated on the centre of the block for the rest of the night, you say. I said, I'm not coming down here to be shelled all night. So he said, well, where are you? I said, we're up on the perimeter. And he laughed like hell. He said, well, he says, if you're still here in morning, come down for treatment. So I said, I will. And I used to go down for treatment, then go back up to the hill.
So he thought it was more dangerous on the perimeter?
It was more dangerous in the block. As far as I did, he thought it was more dangerous where we was, up on the perimeter. Which I suppose, you know, one was as bad as the other, depending which way you probably wanted to go. Whether you wanted to be shot or blown to pieces, you had a choice. I didn't fancy being blown to pieces. And he was on our way, I don't know just how many days, Matt, short of Morgong, that I felt lousy again. I thought, oh God, it's malaria, I'm going to have malaria. And I got up on this march this morning, loaded up and set off. And I ached, oh, I felt terrible. Anyway, the next thing I did, I was waking up. I'd passed out, collapsed. And not only that, but I was on my own. The collar had gone. You know, what the hell do I do now?
They just left you?
Just gone, yeah. It wasn't deliberate, because you often, any of us, often drop behind when you was marching in column for one reason or another, just couldn't keep up to the next stop. But every hour you stop for 10 minutes. And normally, in that 10 minutes, you're caught up to your platoon again. You didn't like doing this, because by the time you caught them up, they were putting the packs on to move off again, so you didn't get a 10-minute break. So you never like to get behind. You always like to be there, so you got your 10 minutes rest before you moved off again. So it's nothing usual for somebody to fall back. But anyway, I got up again. I say I felt terrible. I couldn't get my breath. I can't breathe. You know, I was gasping. And then I heard a noise behind in the jungle. I thought, oh my God, Japs. So I went off into the jungle, like, and I thought, well, this is it. Like, I took my pack off and got behind this big tree and waited to see a rumble of a bullet cart. I thought, well, we've no bullet cart. And there's this clank, clank coming up through the jungle. My grenades were out, you know, ready. I thought, well, at least if I make a noise, they'll, you know, know there's somebody coming up at the back of the column, because I don't know for how long they've been gone. But I think that was, you know, when I thought, well, this is it. This is as far as I'm going. Really, I don't think at that time I cared. Anyway, this thing come into view, and it was actual fact, it was all them that had fallen out before me, sick. And they'd got hold of this bullet cart, and they'd put all the packs on it, and they were coming along behind the column. You know, the ones that were sick and what have you, they'd fallen out before I had done. And we marched along with them, which I was quite pleased about, and we came to where they'd got an airstrip. And there's an MO. So I reported sick. So he says, yeah, you've got malaria, it's bronchitis. I said, I can't come and breathe. And he gave me an exam. He said, you have malaria and bronchitis. So he says, you know, that's as far as you go. Like, you were... we'll see about getting you out. Well, there was a lot of people worse than I was with malaria, with some with wounds, not a serious wound, but certainly wounded. Until it came that nearly to my turn when the monsoon washed the strip out. So the MO says, well, that's it, like, no more planes coming in, we shall be moving off tomorrow to go on to Morgong. Which we did, and we arrived into Morgong. And the MO immediately vanished. We never really saw where he went. Obviously, he went straight to the hospital tent. And we were sort of left. There's only about half a dozen of us had not been able to get flown out. So we were together. We said, well, decided what we're going to do. I said, well, someone said, I'm going to try and find my platoon. I said, well, that's the only answer we can do, is find out, you know, try and find our own platoon. Anyway, with that, a sergeant came up to us. He said, what are you lot on? So I said, well, no, we just come in with the MO and the sick party. So I said, I can't touch you. So I said, why, what's up? Well, he said, I have a lot of wounded. He said, I'm in platoon. He says, up there. And he says, I can't spare anybody to carry him back. He said, I'm looking to see if I can find any odds and sods about to come and do it. I said, I'll go. And the other said, well, you know, we'll come. So we said, we'll dump our packs here where we are and we'll go. Well, we went up to, we can't call it a front in Burma, because there is no front. Every battle was his own little battle in his own little area. We went to where this platoon was, the sergeant took us. And there was these here lads in the brigade, they were in slip trenches, but you'd think they were just kneeling up in water. They were going up to their eyes in swamp. Everything was flooded. They were white as sheets, their eyes sunken, I don't know, I'll never forget. It was... anyway, we took the... helped carry these wounded back again. They went back several times. And by then it was getting dusk and standstill time, so we stood to where we was, the six of us. And we spent the night there. And then the following morning, I was lucky enough to bump into our platoon commander. He'd been wounded. They'd, prior just reaching Morgong, the platoon had been sent off to capture a ferry on the Morgong River. And they'd left, the platoon had left the column, gone to Tarpaw Ferry and taken it. In the process, Captain Butler had been wounded in the arm. And this particular morning, he'd just come through to with an escort to have his wound dressed and get his orders from Brigadier Calvert. When I spotted him, I went over and he says, right, he says, we'll pick you up on the way back. And he says, now, he says, the Chinese are just coming, heading sooner or later to cross the river. He says, now, I think there's a place just down river from here will be an ideal place to cross them. He says, so I'm going to leave you there. He says, now I'm going back to the Tarpaw Ferry. He says, now send a section up to get it organised. Fair enough, like. So he dropped me off this area along this river. Morgong River was a little bending river. Fast flowing. And fairly steepish banks in different places, but this wasn't too bad. And a little while later, the section came up and we started preparing the banks. And then in the meantime, the Tarpaw Ferry, I believe they had some REs dropped with boats, because we'd lost a lot of our REs in the block and one thing and another, wounded. And so they dropped them down. I think they only did one parachute drop. They said, do you want to do a couple of practice drops? I says, no, one will do, we'll just do the one. And they dropped down with their boats at Tarpaw Ferry, boats without board motors. And I don't know. A thing happened then that was rather funny. We was waiting on this bank, and a big raft started to come down the river. A well-built raft with rails on it. And it was loaded with boxes. Well, it didn't look like anybody on board. So I says to the officer that was with us, I said, what about taking a boat out and having a look at it? He said, it might be booby-trapped, you know, it might be a trap. Oh, I said, I don't know. I was looking through the binoculars, I said, there's some sort of stores on it. So he says, I said, I'll go. I said, one of the boats. So one of the Irish says, come on, he says, I'll take you, I'll come with you. So I said, right, so give me all that brain gun. And I took a brain gun on the front of the boat and said, go around it. And because it's a fast flowing river and this thing's going down river, and so are we. We'd no idea what was in the jungle either side of us at all. And we went round this thing, I didn't see nobody on board, so I went on board of it. And so these boxes, and they were medical equipment. So we got a tow on it, and we turned round. Well, of course, the current was too strong to get us back up the middle, so we had to come right into the bank and come back up the backwater. Well, I was behind all these boxes with this brain gun. As I say, we didn't know what was in the jungle coming through. It was a bit of air-raising at the time. But we got this raft back again, and it was full of medical supplies.
British medical supplies?
No, they were, I believe they were American, most of them. There weren't a lot of markings on them, as far as I remember. There probably was, but we didn't. Didn't take a lot of notice, actually, but they were all medical. There's plasma, even down to thermometers, that we opened one box. And we didn't do any more about it. We said, well, this lot's going to be useful up at Morgong. So we had it all shipped up to Morgong. And I've often tried to find out why that, and nobody knew where that raft had come from. I asked Mike, he never knew. So we never did find out, and I don't know to this day where that raft came from. But this stuff did, we sent it up to Morgong. And shortly after that, there was this boat came down the river, and an American on board shouting, hey, you guys, where are you? The Chinese are ready to cross. And that started the crossing of the Chinese across the Morgong River. I was in the water all that night. That I do know. But after that, I don't know anything. I did pass out. And afterwards, I was told I was dragged out of the water by the officer because I had no intention of coming out. I'd seen the lads in Morgong. I'll get them bloody Chinese across. We got, as I say, that was more or less the last I knew. When I came round again, everything was quiet, and I came across to the lad and says, what's happening? He says, all right, so they're across. Morgong's fallen. He said, well, the Chinese didn't do it, the Chindits did. It seems that the Chinese, although we'd got them across, they didn't actually, I think they covered one of the flanks. But for some unknown reason, I don't know, Mike and the brigade, what was left of it, took Mekong. After that, they said, we're going down to Michenauer. At that time, Michenauer, they caught the airfield, but they hadn't caught the town. And here and later, I think Mike headed us the other way and matched us out of Burma. I think he got into a bit of bother over it. But the last thing I did was we marched out and we got to where the Americans were building the Lido Road. And I said, I'm going sick. And I went sick with toothache. My toothache, I'd had all this time from White City. And I found the only relief I could get from it was I used to bite some tobacco off a cigarette and then shove it in the hole in my tooth and seal it with chewing gum. And that would burn for so long and then the pain would go away. So arguably then I go sick and the MO said, what's the matter with you? And I said, I've got toothache. He said, well, don't worry about it. He says, you're going out. I said, oh, I am worried about it. I said, I've had it ever since White City. He says, and I'm not moving another step till you pull it out. Which, after a long argument with this MO, which I'm no mistake, I've probably got a court martial, he said, well, I can't take it out. I've no equipment. Well, by this time, two of his orderlies had rather thought this was a big joke. Like, they said, well, you have got the equipment, sir. He said, we haven't. He said, you have. We've had it all the time. He said, well, go and get it. And he brings out this equipment. Well, of course, it had gone through the jungle, never been unwrapped. It'd been in the monsoons and the humid atmosphere of the jungle and everything was rusty and, you know, he said, I can't use any of this. I said, you can. He said, I can't. I said, you can use that thing. I said, that's a pincers. He said, well, he says, I can't, you know, you'll get nothing. He said, I can't do it. And the lads, these two MOI, they said, go on, sir, go on, you do it. Go on, pull it out. So in the end, he relented and he says, all right, he says, sit down there. And he put one MI out, oddly that side of me, one that side of me. And he said, he got hold of my tooth. And he said, when I say three, I said, I'm going to pull. He duly said three, and we all went, he went backwards that way, I went that way, they went that way. And I thought, oh my God, when I saw him laid flat out on the deck like. And he was looking at the tooth and he says, I've done it. He says, I've done it. He says, you're not going to get this tooth back, he says. He said, I'm going to have it mounted, I'm going to have it round my neck.
Was there any anaesthetic?
Eh? No.
Did it hurt?
It hurt like hell, but it was really worth it.